your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin again, the host. True Wealth is, as always, brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service, always engaged in the purchase and sale of precious metals, rare coins, jewelry, diamonds, scrap gold. We specialize in wealth and capital preservation. We build portfolios to help people preserve and protect the wealth that they've earned or that God's given them. We also do IRAs and 401ks on a regular basis. It's a very simple process. Everything we do at Coins Plus is really financially structured for the client. We do what's called a self-directed IRA, which may sound scary, but it isn't. It's just basically when people claim to manage your money, they're really doing nothing. And so what we do is we get you set up in your own money market, your own trust account, whatever you want to call it, capital trust management, you know, whatever. So you end up under that IRA, 401k umbrella. Everything remains tax exempt if you want to leave it there. And then we just put it into metals. We actually physically choose the metals, and they actually get stored in a safe deposit box, and they're under lock and key. You can't get them for obvious reasons because the IRS doesn't want you to go spend all your gold and silver and tell them you still have it. So there's a pretty regimented system of that. But the point is you own physical metals. And, you know, I was talking with a friend. Oh, real quick. You can reach Coins Plus at 444-0044 if you're listening in the Spokane area. If you're listening outside the Spokane area, our toll-free number, if it matters anymore with cell phones, is 877-827-2646. 877-TAP-COIN. That's what happens when I multitask. It's harder than you think sometimes to be talking on the radio nonstop and trying to, you know, juggle things and read things. But believe it or not, if anybody can do it, I do it. And you'd be surprised sometimes that I'll be talking and reading at the same time, which is, I think, physically impossible. So that's probably the reason I struggle with it so badly. And so obviously the news of the day is that yesterday Donald Trump dropped the bomb on dropped 59 Tomahawk missiles on Syria. And, you know, and that was in response to the release of sarin gas on his own people. I think the thing that's really hard for us to understand is that he's Bashar al-Assad, who's the whatever he is, the president of Syria, is actually trying to commit genocide on the Sunnis with the assistance of the Russians. Anybody who wants to reasonably and rationally try to say that Trump's got some kind of fetish for the Russians or he's in cahoots with them or their buddies is nuts, because Russia is bedfellows with Syria, which, you know, that says it all to me. Syria is the hotbed of ISIS. This is where ISIS is born, bred, and raised. This is where they hide out. This is where they arm up. And folks, I can go all over with this, but I'll tell you how critical some of this stuff is. No one realizes to the extent that Barack Obama went to arm ISIS and to support Syria. The reason that he said this is a red line, if you cross it, you're done, is because it looked bad to the world. But if you recall, Benghazi was right around the same time. You know, so if you put the two together, Obama was trying to make a presence before the world. He was trying to send a message to Assad and say, look, this is looking really bad. This is at what they would call bad optics, as they say. And so, you know, he was trying to give a message, don't do it. So they go ahead and do it again. And guess what? Nothing. Nothing at all. And around the same time, we have the Benghazi situation, where few people realize what was going on there was that Obama was sending weapons which were being confiscated from Libya to somebody in Syria. They know that was what was going on. That's why they worked so hard to cover up their existence, to cover up their presence in Benghazi. That's why they didn't go forward and try to protect the ambassador and everything else. And the fact that Obama is a wimp and he had another election coming up. He basically was trying to say Al-Qaeda was all but gone. And they don't care. They spin and lie and lie and spin. And I think I'm not going to deny that Obama and his administration were phenomenal at it. I mean, they were terrific. No one, I don't think anybody would ever claim that Donald Trump is good at spin. I mean, he may be smarter than we think, but Obama and his crew were classics. A gal came out right after Trump got into office, and just like the gal that, I don't remember her name, that made the comments about how they were trying to cover up the wiretapping before Obama got out. One of the first gals that came out of the office, I wish I had her name, but she was talking about how the Trump administration was scrambling to get so much done. And she was there for the transition, and she said that they're trying to get more done in however many weeks than Obama's administration did the whole time. And she said that Obama's administration spent most of their time, or a great deal of their time, around a table trying to figure out how to respond to media stories. In other words, how to spin them. And when she was saying that, she didn't think she was condemning anything. She thought that's what presidents should do. But the truth is, they were spending all their time creating spin. And the situation we're in globally now is very dire because of Obama. We have emboldened and empowered so many world tyrants: North Korea, Iran, of course, Syria. These countries have no fear of us. And the problem is, you know, when a guy gets a little too much of himself, it's very proverbially biblical that they don't just back down. There's a lot of verses in the Bible, in Proverbs again, from Solomon, who was a king, about the fact that blows or strikes, you know, hard hits, often is what it takes to wake a fool up. And unfortunately, a lot of these people have been overly empowered. We have created a monster. If you let if you let the cockroaches take over your house for 8 years and then try to deal with them, you're in a lot worse condition than if you never let them in the first place, right? You try to stop it, like they say, nip it in the bud, and that's, you know, to prevent suckers from running on your plants, which ultimately kill them. Obama didn't do this. He thought of himself as this bizarre world diplomat. He thought he had a different worldview. He thought that he could share, and he did. He shared in the world's external view of America as this big, arrogant, white giant that was rich and, you know, stuck their nose where it didn't belong. That's what he saw this nation as. But the truth is, I think with what God gave us as a nation is that we are to be defenders of civil justice. I mean, you know, I like how you get some of the left wingers that just pounded Trump on this Neil Gorsuch nomination. Neil Gorsuch got the highest rating possible from the American Board Association, the Attorneys of Board Association. I mean, and they're a liberal organization. They said this guy goes by the text like nobody's business. He goes by the law. And they absolutely endorsed him. He was approved by the Senate for the appellate court, I think it is what you call it. It's not, there's another name for it, back in 2009. He's just got a stellar record. And what's worse is when the left again, just character assassinated Judge Clarence Thomas when he was going through the hearing, the nomination process. It was a disgusting, just a pathetic, sad, you know, junior high-ish, or as they say, sophomoric production where they were asking him about comments where Anita Hill, who worked for him, said that he thought he saw a pubic hair on his pop can. And, you know, they were literally just baiting him with all this trash, folks. And in my opinion, it isn't both sides that behave the same way. Of course, that would make a liberal angry, but they don't behave the same way. There's a difference between seeking truth and justice and righteousness. And you will not ever see in history where the Republicans have behaved the way that the Democrats do. The Democrats represent, in general, the godless members of society, or people who claim, I've had people claim to me that that's offensive to call a Democrat godless, you know, because they're Catholic and they're this and that. And, you know, they're religious. I know of at least one family that was so a Democrat liberal that was so radically harshly strict on their family, on their kids, that their kids, you know, about lost it. In fact, every one of them blew out in a terrible way, you know. So it's not, there's a difference between being religious and really understanding and comprehending God and realizing that this system is built on God, by God, for God, and not on man, by man, for man. And we're getting to a point in society where it's okay to mock people for their beliefs. You know, you think of 2 Timothy where it talks about how things are going to be in the end times. It's pretty amazing to read that stuff. I was reading it last night or the other night over the phone with my mom, just talking about, you know, what to expect in the end times. And it's spooky stuff. I mean, to look at and think, wow, we are actually there now. And that's where it ends with, you know, having a form of godliness, but not denying the power thereof. And folks, I don't know where we go from here. I've had so many people ask me this, where are we going? And you know, is Trump the right president for the time? Sure. I think there's no doubt that he's the right man for the time. I think God's put him here. Why we got Obama? I think because we deserved it and we needed it, as bad as that sounds. Trump's a little different, but he's definitely a redemptive force. And he's, you know, he's trying to do the right thing. There's some things I disagree with. I personally think the drug war is a huge hoax. I think it is a massive money-moving beast that requires huge amounts of capital. I mean, the people that are in it, and I know many of them, they don't think it all the way through. They don't realize that it's always going to be there, that it's self-funding, that it's self-propagating, and that as long as they continue to pursue it, it's going to exist, you know, and now we've got the opiate crisis, which, you know, the numbers are interesting because you guys hear me talk about that a lot, and you're probably like, what's his gig on that? My gig on that is the fact that they're false numbers. They're numbers that haven't changed. They say, oh, the death rate from opiates has gone so high. The problem is there are opiates, pain meds, on the street, okay? And they used to blame the death. If somebody had heroin and meth in their system and some OxyContin, they would blame the death on heroin or meth. Now they blame it on the OxyContin and they ignore the heroin and the meth. And that's a fact. They statistically changed the numbers a few years ago, and I'm telling you, folks, it went from hundreds of deaths a year to tens of thousands because, yeah, people are dying and the drugs are out there and they're pooling things together and calling them things they're not. And it's, you know, and it may be an epidemic. Drug deaths may be an epidemic, but let's be honest about what it is. I'm a statistician by nature. That was my academic area of expertise is statistics. And to the average person, they might think, well, that's easy. You just take a bunch of numbers and you add them together and divide by the number of numbers and you get an average and you got a whole degree in making averages. No, statistics gets extraordinarily far more exotic than that. You get where you can actually predict things that you would never think you can predict. You get where you can predict randomness and all the different variables and it gets very complicated. But the fact is, I want real numbers. I want facts. Give me the truth. We can deal with the truth. I think a lot of times they don't want to deal with the truth. Now, Big Pharma makes big money. Everybody says, oh, the reason opiates are so big is because Big Pharma makes all the money. No, the reason the opiate epidemic is going so crazy is because there's no money left in the opiates because all their patents have run out. And now everybody's making a generic version of it, and they're everywhere, and anyone can get them, and you can buy morphine or whatever for pennies a pill now through the prescription, the pharmacy. And so they're not big profitable things for the pharmaceutical companies, and so they're letting them go now. They're putting up a smokescreen, acting like they're cooperating, while they're actually creating new drugs that are so destructive to the human body you wouldn't even believe it. The pharmaceutical companies, this country is medical system is based on a cut, burn, and poison system. Back around the time of our founding fathers, a number of our founding fathers were putting a college together, I believe it was Smith, that was going to create a continuous forum of learning by gathering all the data from around the world, from natives of different places about the insects and plants and all their medicinal effects. And they wanted a constant learning university that it never stopped. Well, of course, you know, the cut, burn, poison money came in and mocked them and belittled them and berated them and used the media against them as they always do and shut them down. And it became a cut, burn, poison facility, medical school. And when I say cut, burn, poison, if you think about it, what do they want to do? They want to cut and do surgery on everything. They want to burn you with radiation, and they want to poison you with medicine, with pills. Now, I personally believe there's all kinds of things in this world that we could ingest to help ourselves in a health manner. There's been incredible studies I've run into with, you know, the accuracy of acupuncture points, where they, you know, an acupuncture point for the kidneys or an acupuncture point for the eye is real. And it's been known from the beginning of time. Why? I'm not totally sure, but I have my opinions. I think the Watchers helped man at a very early stage detect this stuff. But one study that was done by a phenomenal doctor was that he would inject herbs into the acupuncture points for these specific parts of the body, and they used an MRI machine to track the movement of this the substances. And the main MRI they used was too slow because it was using the neural system, I guess, which is the white fat. If you've ever hunted and gutted an animal, there's this white striated fat that goes throughout all the body. It's a complete system in the body that's completely overlooked. We never talk about it. We don't work with it. We don't even pay attention to it. It's the transport system of the body. It's how it actually transports many, many things. Obviously, we've got blood, and the body's very careful about what it lets into the blood system, but the neural system has a lot higher tolerance ability. So when you inject into a specific acupuncture point, the neural system will transport those herbs or whatever you've injected directly to the point of concern. And in addition, they can take electrical readings on the acupuncture points and get an exact reading on how that specific organ is behaving. There was a gentleman years back, a doctor I met and talked to and listened to, and I was blown away, and I had his CD, and then I traded the car and left the CD in the car, and I never could remember who he was again. But the moral of the story is there are so many amazing alternatives, and it makes sense to me. He was a Christian, and his attitude was, look, God made our bodies machines, From the earliest of times, you know, the earliest Jewish writings we know, in fact, even in our Bible, the sons of God came down. Why? You know, why? And no one asks why. Well, in the earliest writings of Adam and Eve, the book of Adam and Eve and Noah and the giants and all this, you know, there's different stories, but they came down. There was a group of them that came down to watch out for Adam and Eve when they were first getting going. To educate them, to teach them metallurgy and, herbology and how to grow stuff and all this stuff. So where they came from, I don't know. But then apparently they left their domain, per se, and began to interact and cohabitate with humans. And apparently they were male and they were very attractive because it says that they took any of the women that they wanted, basically, for their wives. So the women were powerless over these great, big, good-looking, whatever they were. And that's where they, and their children were Nephilim. They were giants. And then later on, God's, when he destroyed the earth, he says, my spirit cannot contend with man forever. In other words, these spirits were immortal. And when you go through the Dead Sea Scrolls and in Qumran, the fragments of the Book of Giants discuss that exact thing, that Enoch is talking with the giants before he has to basically eradicate them, and they're weeping, they're expressing emotion, and he's discussing the fact that they're immortal. And so a lot of these crazy myths and legends and stories that we have that pass through our, you know, generation to generation and on, millennia, are very likely based on fact, especially pre-flood fact. And it is ironic that when you go all the way back in history, there's always stories of wizards and sorcery and giants and beasts and, you know, and dragons, of course, which are very clearly discussed in the Book of Job. People don't realize it sometimes, but there are direct references to unbelievable creatures that God created that Job wrote about. Many people believe that Job is a pre-flood book that was carried forth with Noah, and it's very possible for the simple fact that it's rumored that all of the writings of Noah were in the, or many of the writings of Noah were in the Library of Alexandria in Egypt before the Muslims torched it. Whatever the guy's name was, he said, if it's important, it's in the Quran. If it's not in the Quran, it's not important, and they'll torch it. That's the same guy that stripped all the casing stones off the outside of the Great Pyramid, the white limestone that the historian Herodotus clearly said that the Great Pyramid of Giza shone light hundreds of miles away, even during the day. It was one of the most it's the most perfect structure built in human history. But, you know, there's a lot of intermixing there. There's Isaiah 19 that talks about the Great Pyramids and how it'll affect the end times. And there's a lot of interesting things. But when you get into, just as a side note for those who don't know, there's mentions throughout the Bible of Leviathan. Job 3:8, let those curse it who curse the day, who prepared to rouse Leviathan. Let the stars, let's see, there may be a more in-depth description of him here. I'll try to back up and find that. Can you draw out Leviathan? Job 41, can you draw out Leviathan with a fish hook or press down his tongue with a cord? Can you put a rope in his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make many supplications to you, or will he speak to you soft words? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you then take him for a servant? In other words, you'll never tame this thing. Will you play with him as with a bird, or will you bind him for your maidens? Will the traders bargain over him? Will they divide among the merchants? This is basically saying, you cannot tame this animal. You can't trade it. You can't sell it. You can't do anything with it. It's so big and powerful. Can you fill? Now, this is where we get into his strength. Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? You got to remember, folks, back then, before we had guns and things like that, they made harpoons and they had catapult launches that were insane. We have found harpoons that weigh 1.5 tons of bronze that they would shoot out of these massive catapults, or like the equivalent of a bow, I guess you'd call it, some kind of a spring-loaded device. 3,000-pound harpoons. So when they're saying, can you, you know, fill his skin with harpoons, they're not talking stuff that men are tossing at him. They're talking mega, mega, you know, bronze harpoons. Or his head with fishing spears. Lay your hand on him. Remember the battle. You will never do it again. I was going to look up the word in Hebrew for harpoon, and my internet's running a little slow. So basically, it basically means a large iron. It means it's made out of iron. A large iron projectile is what it means. So it does explain that it's iron, but it doesn't go into much more detail. I thought maybe it did. I'll get back to the scripture here if my internet will cooperate. Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hand on him. Remember the battle. You'll never do it again. Behold, your expectation is false. Will you be laid low even in the sight of him? No one is so fierce that he dares to arouse Leviathan. Who then is it that can stand before me? That's God talking. Who's given to me that I should repay him? Whatever is under the whole heaven is mine, God says. I will not keep silence concerning his limbs, or his mighty strength, or his orderly frame. Who can strip off his outer armor? Who can come within his double mail? Okay? Mail, back in the olden days when they used to fight, way back in ancient times, mail is where they would build metal scales, and they would specifically lay one over the other with a specific purpose, very purposefully, so that you couldn't get under it very easily. You could pull it up, but it was difficult. And this is saying, so that was hard, right? This is saying his double mail. So God gave this beast, this Leviathan, this sea-dwelling monster, you're going to find out here, that blows fire out his mouth and his nose, some, you know, double mail, scales that are impenetrable. Whatever this thing is, we don't know. Who can strip off his outer armor? Who can come within his double mail? Who can open the doors of his face? Around his teeth there is terror. His strong scales are his pride, shut up as with a tight seal. One, speaking of his scales, one is so near to another that no air can come between them. I mean, that is tight and hard, folks. They are joined one to another. They clasp each other and cannot be separated. So there's some kind of a locking system God built into this guy. Out of his mouth go burning torches. Sparks fly and fire leaps forth. Out of his nostrils smoke comes forth, as from a boiling pot and burning rushes. His breath kindles coals. In other words, his breath lights fire. And a flame goes forth from his mouth. So this is a fire-breathing dragon with some kind of incredible scale system that is beyond anything we can comprehend today. Job obviously saw this. This is the Word of God. It's the real deal. This is serious. This is a serious beast, right? In his neck lodges strength, and dismay leaps before him. The folds of his flesh, we're speaking of Leviathan still, if you don't know, the folds of his flesh are joined together firm on him and immovable. His heart, now this is bizarre, his heart is as hard as a stone, even as hard as the lower millstone. So the lower millstone, when you had millstones to grind stuff down, they literally got the large lower millstone often was 6 tons. That's the same object that the angel threw down when he was speaking of the destruction of Mystery Babylon. It was the biggest, hardest thing they knew, and it was made out of the hardest granite you could get your hands on, and it would get just smooth as glass from grinding on it. But it was absolutely the hardest, hardest, hardest thing you can imagine. And they're saying that his heart was as hard as basically crystallized granite. Okay? I mean, what is this thing? When he raises himself up, the mighty fear, because of the crashing, they are bewildered. So when he moves, this is dinosaur material, folks. The sword that reaches him cannot avail, nor the spear, the dart, or the javelin. He regards iron as straw, bronze as rotten wood. The arrow cannot make him flee. Sling stones are turned into stubble for him. Now again, sling stones, you might think of what David threw at Goliath. No. When you go back in history, in warfare, and you research the level of technology that they had developed for catapulting large objects, and they would often use flint stone, which basically exploded when it landed. I mean, it just, boom, flames, sparks, heat, and black dusty smoke would cover the area so bad you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. So this is what they're saying when they're talking about sling stones. They're not talking about, you know, throwing little pebbles at this guy. They're basically talking about massive, you know, drape. They call them curtain stones or drape stones back in the day. They were so massive. They'd build these huge wooden structures. And you've probably seen some of the movies. I think there was one about trying to take the Crusades, it may be of the Mohammedan movement of Saladin taking over Jerusalem or whatever. I mean, they came in with these catapult devices that were, you know, hundreds of feet high, and they would have these massive African elephants pulling these humongous stones, and these catapult devices would throw these stones, you know, 20, 30 ton stones at hundreds of miles an hour. Obviously, that's not the size they were throwing at Leviathan, probably, but the point is they weren't just chucking pebbles. They had the ability to do some impressive stuff. The whole mindset that man was this primitive, ignorant, weak fool, and now all of a sudden we're super intelligent and technologically advanced is wrong. Man is man. And I think part of the reason that God shortened our lifespan to 70 years is because we could accomplish so much in 700 or 800 or 900 years. I am convinced pre-flood there was so many phenomenal things. You know, we find these massive I guess you'd call them masonry structures where, you know, they have 20 and 30 ton stones stacked, you know, hundreds and hundreds of feet high, so tight that to this day you can't even get a hair in between them. And they're cut so perfect. And we cannot do it. We do not have the technology or the ability to do it to this day. And so based on maybe a different atmospheric condition, time, equipment, whatever, they were able to do that. Even on the Great Pyramid, where we have 2.6 million stones that range from 3 tons to 75 tons, there is not on any of these stones any evidence of cutting with a hard blade. If you saw that today, if something in a minor scale of the Great Pyramid today, you would see evidence of cutting on each stone. In addition, ours would, you know, we wouldn't maintain level. 13.5 acres off in level by less than a quarter of an inch after 5,000 years. I mean, there's in the height of it at, you know, whatever it is, 400 and some feet, 463 feet, and yet every course of stone is perfectly level to this day? Man was no fool. Man, I believe, that did the pyramid, I believe it was Enoch with the assistance of God, obviously, giving him deep, deep wisdom. But the point is, you know, that wisdom continued on. So man wasn't, you know, impossible or impossibly lost until technology. Then it goes on about Leviathan. Clubs are regarded as stubble. He laughs at the rattling of the javelin. And then now it talks about his belly. It says his underparts are like sharp potsherds, which is broken glass. So his stomach is like massive pieces of broken glass. It's so sharp. He spreads out like a threshing sledge on the mire. So he's, you know, he just crawls in a really wide fashion. He makes the depths of the waters boil like a pot. So I don't know if that's from his heat or just his movement so massive. And it says he makes the sea like a jar of ointment. In other words, it probably loses all of its clarity. Behind him, he makes a wake to shine. One would think the deep to be gray-haired. So it's talking about how much he churns the water when he moves in it. Nothing on earth is like him, one made without fear. He looks on everything that is high. He is king over all the sons of pride. So some people listen to this and they go, yeah, there was dinosaurs on the earth. Okay, so here's the deal. I believe we know there was dinosaurs on the earth. We have archaeological evidence. I personally believe in the theory that there were things here before man came and that there was a creation, but man's unique and so on and so forth. But if there were other dinosaurs on the earth at that time, why would they say nothing on earth is like him, one made without fear? Because this is an impressive beast. But when you look at the archaeological evidence of dinosaurs, there were things that were unbelievable at the time. In fact, people, you know, some of the stupid criticism is that, you know, it may be true, but they say Lucifer, you know, designed the dinosaurs and all this. Like, he had his domain. He had his time to be God. And he created all these weird, huge creatures. And they say that, you know, dinosaurs look like they couldn't have even walked based on the gravitational conditions of today and all that. Well, there's evidence that there was, you know, a far greater atmospheric pressure, high oxygen and fluid content, making things a lot lighter, et cetera, back then. But basically my point is this. This is God. This is what God creates. This is what God can do. This thing is mammoth and it's massive. And these, you know, this is the time. There was a time when there's been all kinds of crazy creatures and beasts on this earth. We live in a way in a relatively minor time. If you look at satellite images of the earth, the majority of it is brown and burnt and dry. And I believe that that's all post-flood remnant. For some reason, God chose to eradicate the deep green tropical earth. And we've had, you know, there's evidence that after the flood, we had an incredible ice age, no question about it, as the firmament was shattered and sent down to earth. And we've had global warming ever since. Global warming is a farce. It's a scam, folks. When you actually get outside of metropolitan areas, in fact, where I'm going with this is this. You never see evidence of it, do you? You hear about it, but you never hear numbers to prove it. Now, when they literally take air samples around Mumbai and, you know, major cities, so what? I mean, of course, man is going to have a high carbon dioxide emissions in those areas. But when you get up into the outer atmospheres, in fact, some of the way they measure it, I was reading the other day, is when they launch satellites into space, they have what's called a pitot tube on certain rockets that will open up and every 5,000 vertical feet and take in a gulp of air, you know, however big, say a couple quarts of air or a quart of air, all the way up 5,000, 10,000, 20, you know, et cetera. And then they, when they test this air, when they find out that when you are just in the upper atmosphere, when you get up, you know, 10,000 feet above the land and better, there is no evidence of anything, no parts per million, billion, zillion, quadrillion. There's no evidence, no existence, no trace of any carbon dioxide emission fluctuation from humans or whatever else. When we take our air samples around metropolitan areas, of course you're going to get that. That's normal and natural. 80% of the earth is covered with water. Water cleanses the air. The rest of land is full of highly oxygen-producing, carbon dioxide-consuming green plant life. That also cleans the air. It is true that as they destroy more and more of the rainforests down in Amazon and South America, it does impact our air quality. That alone could have some effect. But still, when you get to the reasonable levels of space, and I'm not talking 100,000 feet, you know, out, I'm talking 5, 10,000 feet, there's no evidence over the oceans, etc. Global warming is a farce. It's a way to control you. It's a way to put this incredibly phony onus on us to make us think we're bigger and more important than we are. And then it's fear. And then we give up money. We give up rights. We get the EPA hyper-controlling business. If you've never been a developer or anything like that, it's really hard to understand the brevity of it because you just haven't gone through the nightmares. And on the other hand, you know, some of our building codes aren't bad. I was talking to a guy yesterday who's a builder, and he was complaining about them. And I said, you know, I agree with you for the most part, but I have been to third world countries, and I've seen some of the stuff they build there. And let me tell you what, our structures are superior to anything you're going to find on Earth. And so there are advantages to it. But in general, global warming is a farce. We know that there were we know that the ice reached all the way to the Gulf of Mexico during that time, during the ice age. So anyway, that's one of my things, I guess. I think I was looking for 2 Timothy 2, wasn't I, a little bit ago. So when we talk about the world that we're getting into now, as an employer, trying to hire a millennial generation is very difficult. But Timothy tells us, but realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come. Men will be. Now think of this. And you don't just look at it and say, check, check, check. You also have to look at it and say, is this different? And I'll contrast it for you a little bit. Lovers of self. Lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revelers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy. There's so much of it. We have magazines called Self. It's all about you, right? Lovers of yourself. You've got to love yourself before you love others, they tell you. It says lovers of money. They have taught us to love money. This is what's behind a lot of the drug dealing and all this stuff, is the absolute love of the love of money. The Bible tells us clearly the love of money is the root of all evil. And anyway, it goes on. We know people are boastful, arrogant, revelers. Disobedient to parents is huge. I talked about that a couple weeks ago. That's one of the commandments. That's a heart issue, root commandment for society. If people disobey their parents, you're done. And we're getting to a point now where kids are so disrespectful, you just don't see that good old down-home respectful behavior that I grew up around in Montana, and I miss it. Ungrateful, unholy. They're not grateful. They're entitled. You know, they're not like, thank you so much. I'm so blessed. I'm so lucky. They're like, I deserve it. I get it. Of course, unholy, unloving. Irreconcilable. You know, you can see that in these ridiculous behaviors on these college campuses. They're not trying to resolve anything. They're just creating havoc and turmoil. And then malicious gossips, right? They go and they say false things. This is what we're seeing from the left continuously, malicious gossips. They have bad intentions, and they're saying things about people that they know aren't true just for the purpose of destroying the individual. The next one says without self-control. Well, guess what? That's the last listed fruit of the Spirit. In Greek, the last shall be first. And the last being the last thing mentioned, it's the most important part of the Holy Spirit, fruit of the Spirit, and there is none. They're saying there's no self-control. Whatever you put in front of them, they're going to respond to. They, whether it's their mouth, whether it's their sexual activity, whether it's their drug activity or alcohol or whatever. And then it goes on, it says that they're brutal and haters of good. Brutal is another thing. They want to see violence done to others without any empathy. And we're forever watching these videos. We saw the black kids beating up, you know, the guy because they said he was a Trump supporter, and they literally just pounded him and kicked him in the face. And, you know, they had no, absolutely no, there was girls there too, absolutely no remorse or empathy for this guy. Then they go on, haters of good, treacherous, which is basically aggressively evil, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, which is, I totally concede. What do people do all day? They want 8 hours a day in front of their electronic devices. Stimulate my nerve endings is their motto, right? They absolutely want their pleasure. They don't want God, truth, and righteousness. You know, a lot of the things we create and put in front of our kids now are basically creating this mindset. And then it goes, you know, holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. Avoid such men as these. And so you get this piety, this righteousness, this when we see the godless, socialistic, left-wingy, anti-God mindset, you get this arrogant godliness. The godliness is a bad term, but it's saying holding to a form of godliness. And so you get this, I guess I just call it religious piety. In Greek, it's eusebia, and it means it means self-righteousness and self-piety. It's a self-pride that's false. It's an arrogance. It's contempt. I spoke recently of contempt and the destructive nature of that spirit. And there's a contempt. But they don't. There's no power in God. They just have this arrogance like they've got it right, which is really foolish because a wise man wants wise counsel and a fool doesn't want anything but to listen to his own opinion and exercise his own power. So this is a big part of what's going on. You combine the moral decline in our society along with what we're seeing in Syria, you know, the Islamic reign, which is a godless, you know, anti-Christian and Jewish form of belief, and we've got this stuff infiltrating our society. And so basically, I think you're probably all in agreement with me on that. There is a lot going on right now. Trump's shaking the waters, folks. China and Russia are literally threatening to dump the dollar. They're threatening to exit the dollar. I really find it likely that they could do it. China holds $1.6 trillion in our dollars, $1.6 trillion in bonds. They trade in bearer bonds because it's such a huge amount of money. And they're just saying, we'll just dump them. If you guys want to mess with us, if Trump wants to get in our face. Folks, think about what happens with China. This doesn't even make sense. They loan us the money so we can buy their stuff. So they end up with our debt. They end up with getting interest on all of our debt. They end up with all of our dollars, and we end up with their stuff. And the greatest nation in the history of the world now produces nothing. So basically, you've got Moscow and Beijing coming together saying that they're going to bypass the dollar. You've got the Russian Central Bank opened its first overseas office in Beijing in March of this year, and they said they're taking a step forward in forging a Beijing-Moscow alliance, listen to this, to bypass the U.S. dollar in the global monetary system and to phase in a gold-backed standard of trade. According to the South China Morning Post, the new office was part of agreements made between the two neighbors to seek strong economic ties and abandon the U.S. dollar since the West brought in sanctions against Russia over the Ukraine crisis and the oil price slump in the Russian hit the Russian economy. And then it goes on and it quotes people from Russia and China. And I'm telling you, folks, it's not just because of one sanction. It's they're talking here about future ties together. You guys know, I'm sure, the biblical prophetic relevance of the dragon and the bear. We're there. And obviously God's timing's different. It's slower. It moves different. But if you'd have thought back 15, 20 years, none of this stuff even made sense biblically. And now it's all coming together. All of it, even to the book of Daniel. I mean, we are now looking at a very critical time. The U.S. has had incredible arrogance. It says bypassing the U.S. dollar appears to be paying off, according to the Chinese State Administration of Taxation. Trade turnover between China and Russia increased by 34% in January in annual terms. Bilateral trade in January 2017 amounted to $6.55 billion. China's exports to Russia grew 29.5%, reaching $3.41 billion, while imports from Russia increased by 39.3% to $3.14 billion. Just as many suspected, with Russian sanctions forcing Moscow to find other trading partners, chief among which China, which is China, this is precisely what is happening. And so I guess I'll nutshell it this way. They're threatening, and you and I know, it's inevitable that the dollar cannot remain the pinnacle form of wealth on earth. And folks, it's a mess. The dollar is a mess. I've discussed the amount of debt strapped on the back of every American citizen and every taxpayer, so on and so forth. China and Russia have true wealth resources. They've done it the right way. Believe it or not, the country that wrote the book on how to do it the right way is actually the country who's been duped into doing it the wrong way. This is where some people criticize capitalism, but it's not capitalism at all. It's crony capitalism. It's absolutely benefiting the uber rich at the expense of the working class. And when we say working class, folks, don't let that deceive you, because they'll say, are you for the working class or the rich? No. Folks, the truth is the rich are the working class. The rich just work harder than the poor. I mean, that's a known statistic that came out years back. Thomas Sowell wrote about it. And the fact of the matter is he doesn't, you know, it just gets overlooked. But the fact of the matter is it is just an inevitable point in time. These countries are specifically talking about abandoning the dollar and uniting in a gold-backed currency. That's not that big of a stretch to think. So simple as this, precious metals-based assets are eternal, timeless wealth. Never will change. The Bible's crystal clear from the second chapter of Genesis till the end of Revelation and Ezekiel and Isaiah. You will be, if you happen to be here on the day of wrath and judgment, and you are, which I don't think the listeners would be worried about their salvation, I'd hope. Those who are worried about their salvation, it says, will be casting their gold and silver in the streets because it will not buy salvation. Moral of that story, you will have it clear to the end. God put it in there three times, so you know that the precious metals-based assets, hard wealth assets, compact wealth, will last until the final bell rings on this earth. I believe clearly God has given us a roadmap so we know what to do financially. He said, you know, beginning, middle, and end of the story. A lot of his most glorious accomplishments on earth, like the building of the temple, introduction, the welcoming of his son Christ, has all got gold related. The descriptions of heaven, gold related. I mean, the biggest, greatest things of all. It's not going away. It is what it is. It's true wealth. Yes, our system has hampered with it and played with it. And, you know, the Federal Reserve System has absolutely manipulated it. But, folks, it will come to an end. And if it isn't soon, you tell me when. All the numbers are ready to go. Everything's ready to go. So you got an option. You put your money where it belongs in gold, precious metals-based assets. You got nothing to lose, right? Nothing. I mean, you're in a beautiful buying valley. Paper markets are pumped up. The metals are looking good right now. You buy it. You either just, worst case, you maintain inflation. Don't listen to fools' prophecies of it becoming worthless. There's no historical precedent of that. And in that case, you're going directly contrary to the Bible. It isn't going to happen. God has given you a system to preserve and protect your wealth. It's simple. It's not complicated. It's a very, I had a kind of a friend, business acquaintance come in yesterday and buy a pretty good size amount of stuff with a settlement check he got on a deal. And he was like, he just expected it to be so much more complicated. And once you have it, if you need cash out of it, it's the fastest, easiest process you've ever had. You aren't investing in a speculative source that can evaporate. You've got the hard, timeless asset, unlike anything else. And with this potentially coming, folks, and it is, I mean, you've got the two greatest countries in the world. This is aligning with biblical prophecy. We know about Mystery Babylon and so on and so forth. How long do you hang on? Are you going to be the one that's bankrupt, sitting on the side of the road under the complete control of this new world government? Or are you going to have the freedom and autonomy to move and protect and preserve your family and feed your friends? You've got to buy. You've got to build an asset-based portfolio, folks. And we build short, middle, long-term, good, bad, and in-between times. We balance it out. If things change, we can move things around. But we build nice, balanced, long-term portfolios, and it's simple. Just give us a call, 444-0044, or toll-free outside the area, 877-TAP-COIN, or through our website at coinsplus.com, where we have all of our previously recorded radio shows. But trust me, I mean, this is what we've been doing for a long time. We do it well, and I'm seeing the writing on the wall here. Maybe you're not, but I'm telling you, if you believe the Bible, I don't know how you couldn't. So thanks again for tuning in. Get a hold of us. Let us help you out. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back Monday. Bye-bye.